All right, we're back. Okay, Nemo's going to answer the question just one more time here because we had an interruption. So, Nemo, what is that called when you end up making a statement like freedom requires slavery? Go ahead, sir.
Contradiction.
A contradiction, yes. This was a contradiction embedded in the founding of the United States. The heritage of slavery, of European slavery, was still there, and it was not something that could be removed unless, well, they wanted to give up freedom. Wow, what a terrible contradiction. What a terrible choice to have to make. They made it with the commitment, though, that they would contain slavery and struggle to get rid of it. So, from then on, we saw that America was deeply concerned with this problem. And the leaders of America kept on trying to find a way to get over it. They did a worse and worse job over time, unfortunately. And the especially worse job was the idea that you can have slavery if you just vote for it. Slavery through democracy. Slavery through what was called popular sovereignty. If people want it, okay, let them have it. Well, that's is the really the true dark side of democracy revealed there, and the idea of rights was going to be jettisoned. In the contradiction, Americans were going to choose slavery instead of freedom, which is very, very sad. But fortunately, there were enough Americans that were abolitionists. What did the abolitionists say that was so crucial to helping America get rid of slavery? What was the message of abolitionism? Slavery was in the Constitution. It couldn't be taken out, so unless you could get a supermajority. But what did the abolitionists say? Is that our main concern? What is constitutional? What did they say? Abby, your hand was up already, so I'm not sure if you're trying to answer this one or not. Oh, well, I'm glad we can review this then, because everybody here should be able to answer this question about what did the abolitionists say? They wanted to abolish slavery. Why? Rosetta.
Because slavery was bad.
Yeah, because it's wrong, because it's evil. So yeah, they were making this argument that you can't vote for slavery. You can't have a society where just because people agree that it's okay, that it is okay. That's not okay. It's wrong. So, and Abraham Lincoln was an abolitionist. He was also a president, and he wanted to respect the Constitution, but he did believe that slavery was wrong. So when he was elected, the Southern states seceded from the Union, and Abraham Lincoln decided that would destroy the United States if any state could leave whenever it wanted. Secession was definitely not an acceptable thing, and so we have the Civil War. So that is our next really huge step in terms of defining modern America. Because the modern American world, thankfully, is a world without slavery. So America emerged into the 20th century as a country very proud of itself. It was large from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean and beyond. It was rich through great leaps in production because of the Industrial Revolution. And it was powerful, with a military capable of defeating the Spanish Empire, once the world's greatest superpower. But no longer. America defeated it in the Spanish-American War, the kind of thing that you could feel proud about in a certain way. However, what was the danger lying now in America's new conduct? What did Theodore Roosevelt say that America would be now that it was going to be out there in the world and behave differently than the founders had advised? He said America would get entangled in other people's affairs. Why? Because it should be an... Nemo, go ahead.
International police power.
International police power, right. Okay, so it did. And, of course, our main anchors of American history since that time are precisely about that. They show America getting involved in World War I. Because President Woodrow Wilson said, as an international police power, what should America's job be? What was Woodrow Wilson famous for saying America's new mission should be? Walker, go ahead.
To make the world safe for democracy.
To make the world safe for democracy, right. So, it's been trying to do that ever since. Here we are, 100 years later, right? 2014-15, pretty close to around 100 years there. And America has had some successes and some failures in that mission. You would have to say that World War I was a failure because America went into Europe, many Americans died, and temporarily Germany became a democracy, but the Germans voted for Adolf Hitler. So talk about another failure of democracy. They voted for Adolf Hitler and Germany became Nazi. Americans were shocked and upset and realized, oh no, making the world safe for democracy is a lot harder than just helping other people to have a democracy, which is another thing that Americans are struggling with still to this day. That America has gifted people with democracy and they don't know what to do with it in many cases. The Germans didn't know what the right thing to do was with it. They voted for Adolf Hitler. We get World War II. And America then didn't want to get involved, we know, but it was forced in. And you could say that World War II was a success to make the world safe for democracy. Because America fought Japan and it fought Germany. And if you look at the world today, two of the most important democracies in the world are Germany and Japan. Oh, so Japan went from being an enemy to being an ally. Germany went from being an enemy to being an ally. Can you see where this is going? Unfortunately, America's ally went to being its worst enemy. Which one? Britain? France, maybe? No. Patrick?
Russia.
Russia, of course, exactly. The communist Russia, the Soviet Union, where people did not believe in freedom any more than they did in monarchies or in other ancient forms of government. And so, because America's enemies had become allies, and its allies had become enemies, or one great ally had become a great enemy, well, a return to normalcy was no longer possible. So we get the Truman Doctrine. A very important anchor fact of American history. We are still living with the results of this doctrine, good and bad. Abby, put your hand up. So, what did the Truman Doctrine say? All right, now your hands up. Go ahead.
It said to stay in Europe.
To do what?
To keep Russia in check.
Yes, but that's very specific. Europe is too specific. Russia's a little too specific. What was the big mission? To make the world safe for democracy from?
Communism.
From communism. There you go. The Truman Doctrine was to take Wilson's idea, but now make it a mission for America permanently everywhere to try to make the world safe for democracy and make it safe from communism. Okay. Abby, put your hand down. Usually you're such an expert on that, but today you're missing it. Okay, so here's a question. How did that lead to the attacks of 9/11 and to the world that we live in today? The great success of the Truman Doctrine, which should always be remembered, is that communism did collapse. So we would have to say, I mean, when we talk about the world around us today, we don't think about the threat of communism. It seems like such an old thing now. Okay? But the Truman Doctrine led to something else. How did it lead to the world that we see around us today? Which means, how did it lead to the war on terror? Is that too big of a question? Maybe it has too many parts. Abby, go ahead.
Well, it led to the war on terror by, well, since America was in Europe, or not in Europe, America was there and they were policing the world, and some people didn't like that. Namely, people in the Middle East didn't like that.
Okay, so hold on. You are now. Your answer is helping me to see that it is a very long answer. It's a complicated answer. So let's just walk across that answer. Okay, to understand it. The Truman Doctrine did not just say. That's why I said, Abby, we can't say the Truman Doctrine said that we will police Europe. Yes, it said that we would end up staying in Europe, but it also said that the United States would police the Middle East. So that's step one of the answer. And it would police the Middle East not just to contain communism, but for what other reasons? What two other reasons did America have for deciding to police the Middle East? Rosetta?
To help Israel.
Okay.
The Middle East had lots of rich oil.
Okay. To have the oil necessary to fuel the ships and the planes to police the world, and also to help the new nation of Israel after the Holocaust. All right, so the United States said we're going to police that area. All right, well, how does that lead to the war on terror? Well, in some ways, it leads to success also. Being a world police power is a complicated thing. It's a very entangling job. You end up having to deal with all kinds of different people. And they act in ways that you don't necessarily understand, don't necessarily make sense. And so it can be very difficult to do. Now, you might have some successes. If you work really hard as a police power, then in 1979, and you want to protect Israel, well, in 1979, you can convince Egypt to make peace with Israel. So that's a success. Okay. But in 1979, you could also have setbacks. So what happened also in 1979 that started to really make terrorism a part of the story of America? Walker.
Some terrorists in Iran took some Americans and held them hostage.
Mm-hmm. Held them as prisoners in what's called the Iranian hostage crisis. Held them as prisoners for 444 days without punishment. So when a superpower doesn't protect its own citizens, that is a very strange thing. When a superpower does not, a world police power does not police, that's a very strange thing. It leads to this outcome that we are seeing around the world. People were inspired by that. Sadly, the wrong kind of people. Right? If the world police power doesn't attack terrorists, then good people are discouraged. But the terrorists are encouraged. Oh, we can do this and we can get away with it. And in the Islamic world, where you have people who would rather live in peace and Many who come to America or go to a place like Israel and they live in peace? All right. Well, unfortunately, they get discouraged because America is not defending that wonderful value. And unfortunately, people who would rather be violent, who don't believe in religious freedom, are encouraged to be violent. And so the worst, most encouraging to those terrible people were the attacks of 9/11, which showed that America was vulnerable, that when you are free people, you are vulnerable to certain kinds of attacks. And so we still live in a world with terrorism today. Terrorists are demanding that Americans give up their free speech. They don't want Americans to draw cartoons. And they will kill Americans if they do, and the American government doesn't protect them. So Americans are struggling a great deal today with how to be free people in a world where they are entangled in the affairs of others that don't understand and don't want freedom. Very difficult job. That is where we are. Which is why our timeline ends with, you are here. This is the culmination of the story. And as I hinted at yesterday, you are also here. Aha! Here we have a preview of the story of ancient history. And what we will learn is next year is just how connected this all is. One of the things that you can see from our anchor fact timeline of ancient history is that many of the anchor facts that we have studied this year are still there because all of history is connected. And the only reason we need to study the ancient past is because it flows through to us through the agency of people like Christopher Columbus, who are bringing all of that ancient knowledge and learning to America, and through the founding fathers who are looking back on Greece and Rome and making a country thanks to that example. So it's all connected. In fact, Thomas Jefferson once tried to make a law that would make the study of ancient history mandatory for American students. He thought that ancient history was so important that all Americans should have to learn it. Talk about an interesting connection to America. So absolutely, American history is, to a large extent, what America became, to a large extent shaped by the ancient world. And our study of the ancient world has to go, in a way, through that lens or that bridge between us and the ancients. And what we will see is that what they did in the past still can help us to understand many of the challenges that we face today. If we want to learn more about ancient monarchy, the story of Manes Narmer, and we can see, oh, look at that. I'm terribly sorry. I just had a huge failure of my program. Would never have expected something like that to happen. Let me try to bring it back. Well, that spoils the flow of my time. Okay, there it is. It's back. Next year, what we're going to talk about is Manes Narmer is going to be right there at the beginning all over again, right? But we will learn about, the fact that in Egypt you didn't have religious freedom either. That the kings pretended to be gods. And that they forced people to build gigantic pyramid tombs for them and so on. Very famous symbols of the ancient world. And that the monarchies of the ancient world were pretty much all alike. Which explains why for basically 3,000 years there was pretty much no progress, which is very sad. Kings came and went. We will talk about a famous king named Hammurabi. And they made promises to people. They said, we will rule justly. We will make sure that our society is good and everybody's taken care of. And we'll see that those were just promises. That the rule of kings is not compatible with rights. So that is why, of course, we will spend most of our time next year studying Greece and Rome. We will see that in 776 BC, which is kind of a cool date, right? Because you got 1776 AD, and you got 776 BC, kind of makes it easier to remember. In 776 BC, the first Olympic Games of ancient Greece were held, and it's such an interesting date because after that, the Romans and the Greeks, their calendar was based on that fact. They measured every date from this point forward. And we might see some, read some materials from ancient historians talking about the date, and they'll always be referring back to this as the birth kind of a new time in history, leading, as we know, to democracy and republic. But as we will see in a story that is really crucial, that the ancient world could not hold on to its freedom. And that this is one of the most important parts of history, is to see examples of people that had freedom and lost it, and to seriously study that, because, well, the Romans lost it. Julius Caesar, a great Roman leader, pronounced the judgment on ancient Rome in 49 BC, and he said, Romans are not worthy of freedom. He crossed the Rubicon, we'll see what that means, and basically decided that he would make himself an emperor. And the Roman Empire really became what it became because of him. And, well, we'll have to see that it took, after that, nearly 2,000 years for freedom to return. And here we are in a time where we still have the same problems. So ancient history is a really crucial part, as Thomas Jefferson said, and he wanted us to study it because from it we can learn how to do what, Benjamin Franklin told us to do. The Founding Fathers, one of the greatest quotes from the founding of America was when Ben Franklin said, "You have a republic if you can keep it." So we'll study ancient history, and hopefully that will help us to be the kinds of people who can help America stay free. Thank you all. It's been a wonderful year of studies together. We have one last session of History Through Art to look for the secret symbol. It has to do with Benjamin Franklin. You'll find out. It has to do with George Washington and the other founders, and it's there inside the painting. I will reveal that tomorrow in our last class, and we'll be done for the year. So, thanks everybody. Looking forward to tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Dad, what is this big black thing around the corner? Some sort of microphone?